wonder if just for a minute we can enter into the desire of the heart of God, just for a moment, because I'm going to take it up where you stopped, Brother Bill. I have raised your sons to be prophets. That God's desire, He loves these individuals who will be in tune with His mind, that know His mind, that know His thoughts, those that will bring a word for the people of God. He raised them up. Perhaps we don't know all the prophets, but He raised among their sons prophets. But I want the young people to take hold of the next one, and of your young men, Nazarites. Brethren, we don't read about many Nazarites in the Scripture. We don't read ever that there was an individual, himself or herself, took up the Nazarite vow. There were mothers that, you know, suggested that, wanted to see that in their children. But behind the scenes, God was raising young men as Nazarites. And young individuals, please, don't feel this is something negative in your life to live a separated life for Christ. It is one of the most privileged things that for a young individual, and of course it carries through our older age, but from such a young age, to live as a Nazarite, to live as a separated individual from the things of the world, but unto God Himself. This is the desires of God. That even in the midst of such a dark picture, yet the Spirit of God will give me something, a sense of what God desires to see. He desires to see individuals in His presence to be acquainted with His thoughts, the prophet. He desires to see young individuals that are living a separated life. But there's a warning. Yet Israel, it's the people of Israel, you gave them wine to drink. Brethren, let's be careful. Although we know that there are individuals that are Christians, but if they are giving wine to our own children, I'm not talking about literally, if they are engaging them in all what the world could offer of joy, the pleasures of sin for a season, let us exhort our children not to hang around them. Because it wasn't the Gentiles who were giving them wine. It was amongst Israel that should know better. And then he says, and you have asked the prophet not to prophesy. And I wonder in our days, once we get sometimes a word from the Lord about our condition, right away we think, we don't want to hear that. Speak of something else. You know, I would tell you that in so many ways we want things like these itching ears in the last days. Things that will make us feel good in the present moment. We don't want a direct word from the Lord because it might be harsh sometimes. But brethren, we have to be open for the voice of the Lord because He knows the needs. And sometimes He has to speak to us in such a way. He's speaking in the days of Amos.
I have a question, but first, just a comment on that, because I think that's very important. It's the commandments of the Lord are sure, enlightening the eyes. So we should go back and search these things to enlighten personally ourselves. And I think it's important because it's so easy for us to be like the disciples and say, why is this man blind? Did he sin or his parents? It's so easy for us to take these lessons and look at somebody else and ignore the mote in our eyes. But my question is, we commented on the three transgressions and the four as the patience of the Lord. But then in chapter 3, verse 2, at the end, I will punish you for all your iniquities. And we made the comment that we will be punished for all of our iniquities. So just how do we, if we could comment on the patience of the Lord within the government of the Lord, His patience and how He's going to visit us. I think Darby says, visit you upon all your iniquities. And then also, does the judgment seat of Christ fit into this at all? Are things laid off as a mercy to the judgment seat? And that's why we don't. I mean, if I stacked up all my sins, my judgments certainly aren't as high as my sins. The Lord is very merciful. So is that a truth here that we see in this chapter?
I think it's important to see that when we're looking in this section, and he's bringing all of the accusations, it's never something that God is delighting to bring judgment upon his people. You'd never get that sense as you go through Amos. there's always this pleading. There's always this, I did this for you. I brought you. I overpowered the Amorites for you. I brought you from Egypt. I brought you through the wilderness. I set up your young men to be prophets and Nazarites. He has this desire to bring them back. But yet, even though he's long-suffering, and you see in the in verse 6, you know, for three transgressions of Israel and for four, I will not revoke its sentence. He has to judge sin. It would become, if the Lord were to just allow sin to continue, even though he's long-suffering, if he continued to not judge it, at some point, he would be unrighteous in doing so. And so God must judge sin. Sin must be judged because of his nature and his holiness, but his love is what provides that long-suffering and provides that desire. The whole purpose of this judgment we'll get to is, you know, study two and study three. The whole purpose of this judgment is to bring us back. And all of the judgments, everything that he brings, it's out of love. He's not doing it because he wants to. He's not doing it because he enjoys to bring harsh judgment upon people. It's because the heart of God is love towards his people.
I thought that the expression that we made earlier, that judgment is the strange work of God, has to be kept before our minds, that that is not his objective. But having to deal with us in a disciplinary way, because we have not been receptive to him, to his word, then he has to come in judgment and exercise that. Ultimately, the judgment that will be visited here is the captivity by the Assyrians, ultimately, the two aspects of the captivity. But one of the things that I'm reminded of, as Brother John was pointing out, the Nazariteship character that needs to be maintained by us, and to be reminded of the goodness and grace of God as wanting sons for his pleasure, I think the pleadings of the heart of God come out in those expressions to us. It's not just that he's telling us what he did, as good as that is, but what he is doing is he's pleading very tenderly with the people of God. He's pleading with us that there might be a response to himself, that we might appreciate what he has called us to. I think of the Rechabites, John, who were told, they were told to drink wine. And because of their commitment to Nazariteship, God had directed this, but because of commitment to their Nazariteship, they said, no, we will not. They honored that Nazarite character. We need to so do. I was just thinking, brethren, I don't know if we want to just move to the first part of chapter 3. Here Amos has three summonses. He summons in chapter 3, he summons in chapter 4, and then chapter 5. The word here appears. It is as though Amos, we've been reminding ourselves, has had this great touch from God. And he now feels it keenly, and he is now pleading, here, open your ears. Jehovah has spoken against the children of Israel. And I like when you said before, holistically now, it's not just Israel, the northern kingdom alone, but it is Israel as a whole. That there's a holistic view that God has about his people. That even though we are in conditions of declension and departure, he's still appealing to his purpose for us.